it would take Moses' intercession to stop Adonai's anger. And here's how he did it. Moses pleaded with God in verse 11. Adonai, his God, he said, Adonai, why must your anger blaze against your own people, whom you brought out of the land of Egypt with great power and a strong hand? If he wasn't buttering them up, I don't know what he was. I mean, keeping this in mind, everything he was saying was true. You did all this for us. Yet your anger blazes. Why, let the Egyptians say, it was with evil intentions that he led them out to slaughter them of the earth. Moses is, what's he doing here? Jewish guilt. You don't want to have that reputation, do you? Turn from your fierce anger, he says to God. Relent. Don't bring such disaster on your people. When they're good, they follow me. It's like, okay, I'll take except, but when they're bad, they're yours. Now here's the key verse, verse 13. Remember Abraham, Yitzhak, and Israel, your servants, to whom you swore by your very self. You promised them, I will make your descendants as many as the stars in the sky, and I will give them all this land I have spoken about to your descendants, and they will possess it forever. It's like, wow, there's no reading between the lines there, is there? Whom you swore by yourself, his word and his word alone was the bond that kept him from destroying the people altogether. Now, keeping in mind, casting judgment against transgression, he did that with Korach and his group. But we're talking getting rid of an entire nation for which he placed his name upon. Different scenarios altogether. Consider Psalm 105, starting in verse 8. He remembers his covenant forever. The word he commanded to 1,000 generations. The covenant he made with Abraham, the oath he swore to Yitzhak, and established as a law for Yaakov, for Israel, as an everlasting covenant. Don't know about you, but I don't think everlasting, the definition of everlasting has changed. 1,000 generations conveys an aspect of eternal nature. We've been here about 6,000 years since God said, let there be light. Depending on how you do the math in determining a generation, in its least form, let's say 20 years, we're only at 300 generations. So, we're talking a long time here. The psalmist recognizes the everlasting promise that Adonai has made to his people. His people for whom would be his messenger, his witness to the power, the mercy, and the grace of Adonai. Because what ultimately happens, Adonai then changed his mind about the disaster he had planned for his people. Moses was effective, but technically he was the messenger. And what was he just doing? Saying, remember your promise. And that's all it took. Ultimately, in the desert, Adonai would not destroy his own people simply because of his word to the patriarchs. It is through this connection that we are here today. His word commanded to 1,000 generations. Going back to Deuteronomy chapter 30, in verse 2. Because remember, it says, when these things happen. Then, verse 2, and you will return to Adonai your God and pay attention to what he said, which will be exactly what I am ordering you to do today. So in other words, what I'm telling you in the desert now is the exact same thing that you're going to be confronted with when you're in exile, to remember the things that I told you first. You and your children, with all your heart and with all your being. God doesn't want part. He wants all. So in order to return, you must first have to have left. A turning away of the people within their hearts would ultimately lead to a nation turning away and ultimately away from Adonai. A consequence of the curses conveyed by Adonai to the people was ultimately expulsion from the land. Question. Will their return be in the fullness? Because what we're going to see next, God is in essence looking for repentance in order for them to return, but it's not going to be that way. Has the nation today fully repented and returned to Adonai? Is Israel a model of faith? But does that mean that what has transpired to where Israel exists today is still not of God? There are some within the body of Messiah that says Israel is irrelevant. Well, it was because of the Holocaust that Israel now has land. Or it was because of this or that. Oh, well, we felt guilty, so we gave them some land. If you do not see the hand of God behind Israel's existence today, I can't express it any more clearly. Can a nation exist in a day? So Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 3. At that point, Adonai your God will reverse your exile and show you mercy. He will return and gather you from all the peoples of which Adonai your God has scattered you. If one of yours was scattered to the far end of the sky, Adonai your God will gather you even from there. He will go there to get you. Has he not reversed the exile of the people? There are more Jewish people in the land today than there have ever been. And just on a side note, if God scatters you, has there ever been a moment in time for the nation that we've regathered ourselves? That would be something to try to wonder about. But the fingerprints of God are all over the nation of Israel today. And yet, we have not returned fully. There is still at least 95% of the Jewish worldwide population that has not accepted Yeshua. But that doesn't mean Adonai is not faithful to his word. Adonai will and is going to great lengths to regather his people to the land he had promised long ago. In regathering them to the land, he's also regathering them to himself. Remember Psalm 105 again. He remembers his covenant forever. Deuteronomy chapter 30 and verse 5. Here is one of the key verses that alludes to the beginning of a new covenant. And verse 6 will bring it home. Adonai your God will bring you back into the land your ancestors possessed, and you will possess it. He will make you prosper there, and you will become even more numerous than your ancestors. You will take possession of the land and reside in it. What has transpired and what is transpiring and what will transpire is a reclamation project that is occurring in the land. It would be comparable to living in a home that you're in the process of restoring. The house of Israel is being restored and they're residing in the land as it's occurring. Because Adonai's promise to regather his people, bring them into the land and restore them, is part of the promise. Verse 6, here is the key. Then Adonai, your God, will circumcise your hearts and the hearts of your children, so that you will love Adonai your God with all your heart and all your being, and thus you will live. I mean, we're going to connect this verse to other passages. But keeping in mind, he says he's going to bring them into the land, and then he's going to deal with them. What's occurring in the land as we speak? An unknown revival that is not being covered of the Jewish people coming to faith in Messiah. It's anywhere from 15 to 50,000. There's small home congregations. There's some messianic synagogues. God's word is not coming back void. God is in the process of restoring the nation to himself, one individual at a time. But that doesn't limit us just to the nation. What's he doing? He's restoring the diaspora as well. He's restoring the Jewish people who have been dispersed. I'm one of them. To the point that this reclamation project, we're seeing the results. We've gone from a bare skeleton wall to where we see form taking shape. We see Messianic Jews becoming more prominent. We see other Jewish people who are not yet believers prominent in speaking about the truth of God. And verse 6 provides us with the concept of the circumcised heart, ultimately conveying the issue that what is going on is a heart condition. The great physician is a heart surgeon. Several months ago, I had shared a sermon about the heart and its condition. It isn't that our heart has a manufacturer's defect from the factory. It is that our heart has become damaged through our own actions. Think of our consumption of sin as the equivalent to smoking and therefore damaging or inflicting damage upon the heart and the lungs. Ultimately, it is the great physician who will restore our heart, which is what ultimately connects us to him. With the promise of the new covenant through Jeremiah, there are a few things I want you to look at. Consider the dynamic of the power of the covenant being made here. What is missing from Deuteronomy chapter 30 regarding the illusion of the new covenant that we talked about in Jeremiah 31? There is no mention of a divided kingdom. He's talking to the nation as a whole. Don't misunderstand me, because Adonai knew Israel would be divided, just as he knew they would be expelled from the land. But what does Jeremiah 31 do? It, in essence, brings forth a reunification of the kingdom. When that time comes, verse 1, when that time comes, says Adonai, I will be God of all the clans of Israel, and they will be my people. This is verse 1. We're in verse 31. Because you will see the unification later on in the verses of 31, 31 through 34. I will be God to all the clans of Israel, a united kingdom. It will be through the new covenant that Israel will be reunited, restored as a kingdom with one king. Consider this, the power of the covenant will not merely atone for sin, but forgive completely, erase from Adonai's memory. We have an exhaustive record of the nation's transgressions. One of the challenges with being Jewish is that your family's dirty laundry is there for everyone to see. Everything has been exposed, and yet the power of the new covenant provides a new beginning for the nation, the people, and ultimately the world. The power of the new covenant by which Adonai establishes the new covenant. Verses 35, 36, and 37. He reveals the dynamic of this new covenant that he's going to make with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah that ultimately becomes united. And consider this. Verse 35, this is what Adonai says. Who gives the sun as light for day. Who ordained the laws for the moon and stars to provide light for the night. Who stirs up the sea until its waves roar. Adonai Sabaoth, the Lord of hosts is his name. If these laws leave my presence, in other words, if the things of verse 35 stop, if they don't exist anymore, if the order that he has established is gone, then the offspring of Israel will stop being a nation in my presence forever. Did the sun come up in the east? I don't know if there was a new moon or a full moon or what stage of the moon. Was there a moon last night? 2 nights ago. Trust me when I say if you can't see it, it's still up there. These things haven't changed. If these laws leave my presence, says Adonai, then the offspring of Israel will stop being a nation in my presence forever. So you didn't see them, but it didn't mean that they didn't exist for a while. This is what Adonai says. If the sky above can be measured and the foundation of the earth be fathomed, then I will reject all the offspring of Israel for all that they have done. Anybody have a count of the number of stars in the sky or the breadth in terms of how large it is or how vast it is? So what does that mean? If you can do these things, then because of what they've done, we're done. But in other words, he conveyed an impossible aspect, conveying that the eternal nature of his promise cannot be broken. It most certainly is not like the covenant made previously that ultimately established the nation, that was to be a light to the nations and made provisions for the foreigner, the goy, the Gentile, to become part of the covenant. We'll talk more about that in the weeks to come. But keeping in mind this aspect of this new covenant in terms of this unification, because in verse 31, it talks about making a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah, a divided kingdom. And it will not be like a covenant that I made with their fathers on that day that I brought them, that I took them by their hand and brought them out of the land of Egypt, because they for their part violated my covenant, even though I for my part was a husband to them. For this is the covenant I will make with the house of Israel after those days. So he's pointing forward to a unified kingdom. Just as Moses, it was revealed to Moses through Adonai, that he's talking about a united kingdom as well. So this is the first stop along the way, looking at Deuteronomy 30, connecting it with other aspects. Keeping in mind we're not done yet. Know this, and this is a little looking forward, that Yeshua is the mediator of the new covenant, just as Moses was the mediator of the covenant given at Sinai. So there is a connection between Moses and Yeshua that we will look at further. But next Shabbat, we'll delve into the promise of the new covenant even more. Because this is not the only place, like I said, that it exists. Jeremiah is not the only place. Deuteronomy 30 is not the only place. But I want you to have a comprehensive understanding, not only of the promise, but by different prophets that it's conveyed through, conveys an aspect of a generational connection to where he's not just speaking to the generation of the prophet of that time, but again, it's generational in nature. So if everybody will please rise.